Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Dave Clements, and I am joined today by Andrew Rome, a worship associate, and also by Hal Walker, our director of music. As Andrew lights our chalice, I share with you the words. May the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom.
I first heard about liberation theology when learning about Catholic social teaching. And that phrase, liberation theology, was coined in 1971 by a Peruvian priest, Gustavo Gutierrez. It was an attempt to understand Christianity from the perspective of the poor. However, this perspective existed before the label, and our own UU history reflects this emphasis on using religious teaching as a way to care for the poor and oppressed. William Ellery Channing is one of our Unitarian Universalist forebearers who was influential in the Transcendentalist movement of early American history in New England, and he preached about the evils of slavery. His 1835 book, Slavery, condemns slavery, but also reflects Channing's beliefs that we would now recognize as racist. His beliefs developed over time, initially rejecting the immediate abolition of slavery and then calling for it. Rather than emphasize the separation of religious life from government, Channing held religious morality as a necessary check on unjust government, as in this passage. We have thus seen that a human being cannot rightfully be held and used as property. No legislation, not that of all countries or worlds, could make him so. Let this be laid down as a first fundamental truth. Let us hold it fast as the most sacred and precious truth. Let us hold it fast against all customs, all laws, all rank, wealth, and power. Are God's laws to be repealed by men? Can government do no wrong? What is the history of human governments but a record of wrongs? How much does the progress of civilization consist in the substitution of just and humane for barbarous and oppressive laws? Criminal legislation ought to be freely and earnestly exposed. Injustice is never so terrible and never so corrupting as when armed with the sanction of law. The authority of government, instead of being a reason for silence under wrongs, is a reason for protesting against wrong with the undivided energy of argument, entreaty, and solemn admonition. Channing's tone is archaic, but his call to take action on behalf of the oppressed still rings true today, and it remains part of our identity as Unitarian Universalists. Come, let us worship together.
When all the people of the world love, then the strong will not overpower the weak. The many will not oppress the few. The wealthy will not mock the poor. The honored will not disdain the humble. The cunning will not deride the simple. I invite you now to quiet yourself and spend a few moments in silence, setting aside everyday concerns and being open to what you find there.
If liberation theology teaches us that we should be freeing slaves, setting the captives free, well, I have a confession to make. I know that there are people today who are trapped in cycles of poverty and work for such low wages that it could be similar to slavery. And further, that our nation has the world's largest number of prisoners who are required to work for far less than our already low minimum wage. And further, that the horrors of human trafficking continue worldwide. Our world needs liberation. And so I have to confess, I recognize this aching need of the world, and I don't spend most of my days working to care for the poor and oppressed. I continue my journey to living a life I feel is meaningful and which creates peace and justice in the world by taking embarrassingly small steps. Learning about liberation theology has helped me take some of those steps and pushes me toward the next ones. I'll give an example. I remember a time as a child when I wished I spoke with an accent, like those cool British people, or like my family from Texas. But here I was in Ohio, just speaking regular English, while everyone else who wasn't exactly like me spoke with an accent. At some point later, I learned to recognize my speech and the unique geographic and cultural factors that formed it, which also made me blind to seeing my own perspective. This is the pattern that exists for much of our lives. We see things from our own perspective and must learn to see ourselves from someone else's point of view. In the 1970s, liberation theology attempted to see how the Catholic Church had been complicit in the oppression of the indigenous peoples of South America since the time of the conquistadors. And after being rejected by church hierarchy for decades, in 2015, Pope Francis apologized for the grave sins of colonialism and asked for forgiveness for the crimes committed against native peoples, which had begun over 500 years earlier. In Unitarian Universalism, I can only hope we will not take as long to recognize our faults. Our faults can be hard to see because we're doing the best we know how. I have every confidence that good people that we are, we would work on whatever ways we realized we are participating in injustice. We are doing the best we know how. And so in order to do the best we can, we have to learn something new. But I know that there are internal forms of resistance to seeing ourselves from another perspective. Because learning something new means admitting we were wrong before. We may feel shame at our ignorance and then unconsciously resist change. Maya Angelou offers us this wisdom, saying, "I did then what I knew how. Now that I know better, I do better." This gives us hope for a better future without shaming our past and allows us to grow with dignity. Actually, I had a church service fantasy in which I convinced Hal to produce a 1992 version of the In Vogue song about prejudice, "Free Your Mind," which says, "Free your mind and the rest will follow," while dancing on a catwalk. Well, look it up, but I didn't really think it would fit. Also, I don't totally agree with the message. I think recognizing our own perspective is good, but it doesn't automatically follow that a more just world will result. Change takes action. Our willingness to look at the ways our world is broken and to see our own place and complicity in that brokenness can help us find our personal next steps toward liberation.
In the Bible, one can read about things that identify someone who is a king. Kings have power, kings have wealth, kings lord over others. Kings use force and killing to get their way. The king that we will refer to today is not a worldly king, such as Jesus, but instead a way of thinking and interpreting sacred texts in a liberal manner that developed in the rise of enlightenment. This way of thinking is called liberation theology and has been described as an interpretation of Christian faith out of the experience of the poor, an attempt to read the Bible with the eyes of the poor. When most people hear of liberation theology, they think of revolution. True liberation includes the struggle against issues like racism, sexism, discrimination, and social justice. Liberation expresses the hopes of an oppressed people and the realization that they are not seen as a passive element, but as an agent of righteous change in history. This morning, I wish to talk about how this theme of liberation theology and how it relates to us as Unitarian Universalists in liberation from oppression. I share with you a true story that I've changed the name, but have received permission from the individual. Rachel was excited to have her son home from college and be able to drive them from Charlotte, North Carolina to Norfolk, Virginia, to visit with her grandmother. She had made that 5-hour drive many times over the years and always stopped at the McDonald's fast food restaurant because it was halfway point of the journey. On this night, it was around 11:30 p.m. when she drove her van into the parking lot. She and her sons got out of the van and went into the restaurant to use the restroom and to order something to eat. When she came out, the excitement to quickly get on their way, Rachel quickly got back into her van and started the engine and began to try and back up. But her son, who had followed her into the van, told her, "Mom, we can't move. There's a police car behind us." Rachel believed what was happening, that the officer was running her license plates. All that Rachel and her sons could do was to sit quietly and wait until the officer finished what he was doing and drive away. All three of them sat in silence in what seemed like an eternity Finally, the officer, without saying anything, drove away. Rachel and her sons watched to make sure that the officer had driven out of sight before they once again continued their journey. Rachel had to ask herself, why had this happened to her family? She had a good paying job, an education, and never had received even a parking ticket. A part of her didn't want to admit why she thought this had happened, but she believed because she and her sons were black. You know, since the acquittal of Tyron Martin's killer in 2013 and the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014, the phrase Black Lives Matter has become a rallying cry for a new chapter in the black freedom struggle. Last year, teacher and activist Jesse Hagopin broke the internet, not in a good way. On Martin Luther King Day, Hagopin was randomly pepper sprayed by a police officer. Video of the incident went viral and all sorts of questions and comments were raised. In Jesse's words, I was preparing to leave the demonstration to go to my son's 2-year-old birthday party. I was on the phone with my mother coordinating the ride when the officer sprayed me in the face. The physical pain was one matter, but what was truly painful was trying to explain this to my kids at the birthday party. Over 160 years ago, Frederick Douglass once spoke about the racial inequality that existed in the United States. In a speech given on July 5, 1852, he said, "There's no Negro problem. The problem is whether the American people have loyalty enough to honor enough, patriotism enough, to live up to their own constitution, where it states, all men are created equal." Are not an exception in the national. Over the centuries, the theology of all men are created equal has morphed into schools of thought and political philosophies that link the effects of racism to cultural differences instead of anthropological differences. The legalization of racist practices can be found in our legislative practices as we trace the laws and policies that have evolved over the past 150 years. We can find Jim Crow practices, educational marginalization, and presently the employment of the law enforcement and correctional systems that continue to subjugate and marginalize huge segments of the national black community throughout the United States. In our own UU history, we find many individuals that have spoken about the importance of social justice. Writer and noted theologian James Luther Adams reframed Channing's words, "I call that church free which brings individuals into a caring and trusting fellowship, which protects and nourishes the integrity and spiritual freedom." He insisted our liberal faith must declare itself in actions toward a goal of more just, democratic society. For centuries, some white people in this country lived comfortably, while some black Americans were enslaved, raped, murdered, and sold like cattle. I believe the BLM movement exists today because without saying, writing, and shouting that black lives matter, while in the hearts and minds of many Americans, they don't matter. When the response to Black Lives Matter is all lives matter, the hypocrisy and mindset of American thought reveals itself. All lives matter, as in this country, as all men are created equal. As we look back through our history and study actions taken in the past, points to the fact that not all men are created equal in this country. The Black Lives Matter movement began not to identify the lives of black Americans, but rather to make sure that black lives are not an exception in the national conversation about lives mattering. Black Lives Matters was created by Patrice Cullors and Opal Tomati as a call to action for black people after 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was killed and the killer George Zimmerman was not held accountable for the crime he committed. Black Lives Matter is an ideological and political intervention. It is an affirmation that black folks' contributions to this society our humanity and their resilience in the face of oppression. There are many actions by the government and the private sector that have led to mass incarceration, limited life expectancy, and limited life aspirations. That automatically questions if Black lives matter. I believe while all humanity is inherently good, most people all over the world have stood silently through massacres, Holocausts, and the ritual of the lynch mob. I'm inspired by many struggles in our nation's history when white people joined in the struggle for racial justice. We need to be reminded of that, and we need to continue to push white people to hold up to the best that legacy that freedom rides and the multiracial dockworker strikes that occurred in the West Coast in the 30s. Then there's the example of Lloyd Lord Garrison, a white man who started an abolitionist newspaper and helped to train Frederick Douglass as a journalist. He built a multiracial partnership that proved historically important when Abraham Lincoln was waffling on what the Civil War was going to be about. When Theodore Parker said that the arc of the universe is long and that bends towards justice, he was speaking about his faith in a world that is evolving in ethics, consciousness, social responsibility, and justice. What better example could we have for our faith today of fighting for justice against oppression? How far have we come in 150 years? Just as Frederick Douglass in that there is no Negro problem today, I believe he would have said that Black Lives Matter movement is not the problem. The situation is the difference between being white or black can mean the difference between sickness and health, between wealth and poverty, and even between life and death in these United States. So I ask you, what can you do today? According to Kenny Wiley, a UU writer, he suggests 5 ways in which we can all engage with the Black Lives Matter movement. 1, learn. Become familiar with the realities of social inequality and injustice that exist in your community. 2, connect. Embrace the movement as it exists today. Become familiar with the local leaders and the issues that they're involved with, both nationally and locally. 3, support. Movement costs money, and protesters need food and water. 4, engage. Make it known that you're part of the movement. Go to protests, community meetings. Hang a banner in support. 5, stay awake. Continue to look for ways to be involved. Determine methods or ways to live up to our first principle, which states the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Some people have said in relation to the Black Lives Matter that all lives matter. President Obama spoke about the debate between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. Obama said, "I think that the reason that the organizers used the phrase Black Lives Matter was not because they were suggesting that no one else's lives matter. Rather, what they were suggesting that there was a specific problem that is happening in the African American community that's not happening in other communities." He went on to say that it's a legitimate issue that we've got to address. Obama then pointed out that saying Black Lives Matter is not about reducing the importance of other groups. I think everybody understands that all lives matter. The Black Lives Matter movement is evolving. It's not fighting to have the lives of black people valued at a greater level than those of white, but to have those lives valued at equal level. To receive the same privilege, respect, dignity, and attention that many of us in the white community take so much for granted. When a black person dies from poverty-related causes, the movement wants people to care. When a black person is unjustly gunned down in the street, it wants people to get angry. It literally wants black lives to matter. That's what it means. Nothing more. So what does this movement, or any movement today, have to do with liberal theology? Well, liberal theology is an ethical theology that grows out of social awareness and the desire to act. Liberation expresses the hope of oppressed people and the realization that they are not seen as a passive element, but as an agent of righteous change in history. As Unitarian Universalists, we claim that every person has a value as a member of the human family. The suffering caused by racism must be ended if we want to create fair and loving communities. We work to end racial discrimination and injustice, starting within ourselves and moving out into the world around us. Today, I invite all of you, regardless of your age and background, to share your hopes and dreams for the role that Unitarian Universalists can play in advancing racial justice in the United States. Many of you are already working with groups and campaigns, and others are still figuring out just how I can be involved. In June 2015, an action of immediate witness was passed by the Unitarian Universalist Association at the General Assembly, and now I quote from that document. Whereas Unitarian Universalists strive for justice, equality, and compassion in human relations, Unitarian Universalists have a goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Whereas allowing injustice to go unchallenged violates our principles. Whereas the Black Lives Matter movement has gained powerful traction in conjunction with the recent events evolving, in particularly police brutality, institutional racism that targeted the Black community, and whereas Tanya Anderson, Rican Boyd, Michael Brown, Miriam Carey, Michael Crusoe, Shelley Fox, Eric Garner, Frederick Gray, Tavon Martin, Kayla Moore, Tamir Rice, and Tony Robinson are just a few names of the people who were recently killed by the racism that exists in the United States today. Whereas people of all ages and races are killed by law enforcement, yet people ages of 20 to 24 are given 7 times more likely to be killed by law enforcement, Black youth. Therefore, let it be resolved that the 2015 General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association calls member congregations to action to become closer to this just world community and to prevent future incidents of this name. And be it further resolved that the 2015 General Assembly urges members to engage in intentional learning spaces to organize for racial justice with recognition of the interconnected nature of racism, group with the systems of oppression that interact people based on class, gender, identity, sexual orientation, and language. And be it further resolved that the General Assembly encourages member congregations to work toward police reform. Be it further resolved, they recognize that the fight for civil rights and equality is as real today as it was decades ago and urges member congregations to take initiative in collaboration with local and national organizations fighting for racial justice against the harsh racist practices to which many people are exposed. No matter who you are, Black Lives Matter in a system of fair, transformative, and restorative justice, just as accountable to communities, is something to which each of us has a right. Unitarian Universalists in our great society have the power to make it happen. Let's do it. And my challenge to all of you today is, let's do it, and may it be so. Take courage, friends. The way is not often hard. The path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down, there is another truth. We are not alone.